And welcome to Page Turn, the Largo Public Library podcast. I'm your host, Hannah. Page Turn is a monthly podcast bringing you information about great books, library news, and fun library tidbits from your favorite programs, as well as a Spanish language book review from Victor. But as always, we start with Reader's Advisory. A mysterious fear disease is scaring to death the citizens of Lungzhou, China. Literally, victims go insane or die frozen in terror, while survivors rant maniacally about demons infiltrating the city. But what's really behind the sudden epidemic? To find the answer, Chief Inspector Lao Fei teams up with a controversial historian and a brilliant psychologist to track down the true source of the illness and halt the wave of horror that threatens the metropolis. As the trio ventures to the primitive jungles and mountains of Yunnan, they're haunted by tales of a 17th century general whose demonic soul, said to have been sealed away in a vial of his blood, has been unleashed on the modern world. Now, trekking deep into the legendary Valley of Terror, they find themselves being stalked by someone, or something, daring them to uncover the truth. And as superstition, science, and history collide, their discovery could be as heart-stopping as fear itself. Today's Reader's Advisory is Valley of Terror by Haohe Zhou. Valley of Terror is a Chinese psychological thriller set in Lungzhou. Part police procedural, part horror mystery, and part historical fiction, the straightforward writing focuses on the plot and the small cast of characters. Readers may also enjoy Uzumaki, Spiral into Horror, Volume 1, by Junji Ito. Kurozucho, a small fog-bound town on the coast of Japan, is cursed. According to Suichi Saito, the withdrawn boyfriend of teenager Kiri Goshima, their town is haunted not by a person or being, but by a pattern, Uzumaki, the spiral, the hypnotic secret shape of the world. It manifests itself in small ways. Seashells, ferns, whirlpools in water, whirlpools in air, and in large ways, the spiral marks on people's bodies, the insane obsessions of Suichi's father, the voice from the cochlea in your inner ear. As the madness spreads, the inhabitants of Kuroshio are pulled ever deeper, as if into a whirlpool from which there is no return. Or, The Day the Sun Died, by Yan Liangqi. One dusk in early June, in a town deep in the Balo Mountains, 14-year-old Li Nianian notices that something strange is going on. As the residents would usually be settling down for the night, instead, they start appearing in the streets and fields. There are people everywhere. Li Nianian watches, mystified, but then he realizes the people are dreamwalking, carrying on with their daily business as if the sun hadn't already gone down. And before too long, as more and more people succumb, in the black of night, all hell breaks loose. Set over the course of one night, The Day the Sun Died pits chaos and darkness against the sunny optimism of the Chinese dream promoted by President Xi Jinping. We are thrown into the middle of an increasingly strange and troubling waking nightmare as Li Nianian and his father struggle to save the town and persuade the beneficent sun to rise again. Or, The Twisted Ones by T. Kingfisher. When a young woman clears out her deceased grandmother's home in rural North Carolina, she finds long-hidden secrets about a strange colony of beings in the woods. When Mouse's dad asks her to clean out her dead grandmother's house, she says yes. After all, how bad could it be? Answer, pretty bad. Grandma was a hoarder, and her house is stuffed with useless rubbish. That would be horrific enough, but there's more. Mouse stumbles across her step-grandfather's journal, which at first seems to be filled with nonsensical rants, until Mouse encounters some of the terrifying things he described for herself. Alone in the woods with her dog, Mouse finds herself face-to-face with a series of impossible terrors, because sometimes the things that go bump in the night are real, and they're looking for you. And if she doesn't face them head-on, she might not survive to tell the tale. Bonus segment! My personal favorite Goodreads list, Valley of Terror is on, is up next. Happy reading, everyone! This month's tidbit is all about the history of K-pop. If you're a teen or know a teen who's a fan of K-pop, check out our virtual K-pop club, meeting next on May 12th. Registration is required. K-pop, for those that do not know, stands for Korean pop music and is a subgenre of pop music that comes from South Korea. While it has become globally loved within the last decade, the popularity of K-pop has been steadily growing internationally since the 1990s. To understand a little bit where K-pop came from and why this specific style of music arose in South Korea, it's important to know a little bit of the history of Korea. Prior to World War II, the Korean Peninsula was fought over by the Japanese, the Chinese, and the Russians. Sometimes, but rarely, the Koreans had control over their own land and culture. In 1910, the Japanese annexed Korea and tried to replace the Korean language and culture with Japanese language and culture. The Japanese Empire of the time exploited the Korean people and their land for Japanese gain up until World War II. In 1945, following the end of World War II, the Korean Peninsula was split into two by the U.S. government and the Soviet government. Initially, the plan was to recombine the two halves and give control of the peninsula back over to the Koreans as a single country. However, due to the conflict between the U.S. and the Soviets and mismanagement, this did not happen. Instead, the Soviet government occupied the landmass for Korea under the leadership of Kim Il-sung as the People's Republic of Korea, and the United States occupied the landmass for Korea, and in 1948, after 3 years of occupation, South Korea held a presidential election electing Ray Syngman as the first president of South Korea. Tensions remained as neither North Korea or South Korea would adopt the other leadership or government style of the other. This led to the Korean War in 1950. After the Korean War, the South Korean economy was in shambles due to the exploitation of Japan and the mismanagement of the U.S. The government, which started as democratic but became increasingly autocratic, was replaced by military rule. The next three governments after that strict military rule were nominally democratic but functionally were continuations of military rule. The most recent government of South Korea is a liberal democracy. Why was it necessary to explain this background of some of South Korea's history? Well, partially because it explains some of why the South Korean government pushed for the international exportation of South Korean culture, called Hallyu, but also to explain the Kim sisters. The Kim sisters were the first international South Korean girl group, comprised of Kim Suk-ja, also known as Su, Kim Ai-ja, and Kim Bing-ja, also known as Mia. These sisters were put together as a group by their mother, Lee Nan-young, to support the family after Su and Ai-ja's father, Kim Ha-sung, was kidnapped and murdered by North Korea in the 1950s during the Korean War. Mia was adopted by Lee Nan-young before the group was formed. The Kim sisters learned American popular music and performed for the American troops. They became so popular that an American producer flew to South Korea to hear them perform, and then helped to get the group to America, where they became a popular group performing on The Ed Sullivan Show over 20 times. Another South Korean girl group to follow a similar path is Korean Kittens. This group toured with Bob Hope and the USO during the Vietnam War, and also found some success in the American music scene. Both due to the economic instability of South Korea, and that South Korea had a travel ban until 1988, the South Korean music scene wasn't able to gain international attention until the 1990s. However, several genres emerged in South Korea, including trot, rock, tong guitar folk, hip-hop, and ballad. Some of the genres are influenced by the Western music scene, and while the influences can be recognized, they have grown into something uniquely South Korean. In the 1990s, these genres saw more hybridization and mixing, which created K-pop. In 1992, Seo Taiji and the Boys debuted on a televised talent show. They received the lowest rating in the show from the judges. However, people at home watching loved their combination of rapping and pop music. Seotaji and the Boys were the first group to gain national love for combining American rap and Korean language pop music. The hip-hop swagger they brought to their music continues to influence K-pop to this day, not least of which because a member of Seotaji and the Boys, Yang Hyung-suk, went on to start one of the most popular idol agencies in the business, YG Entertainment. In the mid to late 90s, the idol era of K-pop started. Several entertainment agencies opened up with the singular goal of forming and developing pop stars. Typically, K-pop stars sign with an agency in their teen years and undergo years, at one point it was at least 7, of training in singing, dancing, media, and presentation before debuting as a pop star or in a group. The management groups develop personas for the talent and control their image. Wannabe idols sign lengthy contracts that often stipulate that they will need to pay the agency back for any money spent on their training and upkeep. Trainings often gain large amounts of debt, which, if they are unable to break out in the K-pop world, can be quite crippling, much like US college debt. It was during this time that the K-pop idol formulas were created. K-pop is heavily produced pop music. The groups and the idols are also overproduced to create a product that is both nice to listen to and also nice to look at. The dancing and choreography is always spot on and dynamic. Even the styles of music in songs and on albums has been workshopped over the years for optimal fan interaction and love. Idols' personal lives are either kept extremely private or they are not allowed to have much of a private life in order to seem attainable for fans. There are no mixed-gendered groups for the same reason, although someone should really tell them that queer people exist. In the late 2000s, the K-pop girl group Wonder Girls opened for the Jonas Brothers for their US tour. This introduced K-pop to young pop music fans here in America. However, K-pop was still a small niche market in America until Psy's Gangnam Style went internationally viral in 2012. Psy is a South Korean rapper and not part of K-pop. Let me just get that out of the way before someone comes to correct me. But Gangnam Style broke through into the global consciousness in a way that helped other K-pop acts to follow in the wake. And boy howdy did they. With BTS and Blackpink, which haven't just been superstars in South Korea, but are also superstars internationally as well. There is a darker side of the K-pop industry that seems to be slowly changing. Retired idols talk about the extreme pressures put on them, the long hours in the gym and extreme diets, as well as the debt that they accrued in their training. Every aspect of K-pop stars' lives are strictly maintained, including being anywhere from highly discouraged from dating to forbidden to date while an active idol. South Korea also has fairly strict beauty standards, and plastic surgery is common, especially among young women. BTS has broken some of the formula by being open about their mental health struggles and were actually given an extended break from the idol life. This came after several popular K-pop idols committed suicide following the waves of hate by so-called fans for not living up to the fans' perceived ideals. Hopefully, the industry and the fans can continue to evolve to recognize the importance of a more balanced life for the idols. Fans of K-pop are extremely loyal and extremely knowledgeable. I hope they recognize that I tried my best and also don't get too mad at me for not talking about their favorite group in any detail and mispronouncing a few names along the way. I look forward to seeing the evolution of the genre in the coming years, and I hope we see you in Virtual K-Pop Club. And now it's time for Book Traveler with Victor.
Bienvenidos a Viajero de Libros. Soy Victor, un bibliotecario aquí en la Biblioteca Pública de Largo, y hoy les voy a estar hablando sobre un libro que se titula La Puerta, por Manuel Loureiro. Sinopsis. Un crimen ritual, una mujer desesperada por salvar a su hijo, Manuel Loureiro sorprende con un thriller ambientado en la misteriosa y legendaria Galicia. El hallazgo del cadáver de una joven, asesinada mediante una antigua forma ritual a los pies de la mítica Puerta de Alén, desconcierta a sus investigadores. La agente Raquel Colina es una recién llegada a este rincón perdido de Galicia para tratar de salvar a su hijo, al que la medicina ya no puede curar. Sin otra alternativa, y llena de dudas, Raquel había recurrido a una curandera local que prometía la sanación de su hijo. Sin embargo, la misteriosa desaparición de la curandera y el descubrimiento de la víctima de la puerta hacen sospechar a Raquel que ambos casos pueden estar relacionados. Con la complicidad de su compañero, en un ambiente mágico y rural, que no acaba de comprender y donde todo el mundo parece guardar un secreto, la gente comenzará una desesperada cuenta atrás para resolver el caso y así hallar la última tabla de salvación que le queda a su hijo. Opinión. Este libro toma lugar en Galicia, España, en una comunidad rural y de atmósfera mágica, donde Raquel Colina, una guardia civil, se muda a un sitio remoto porque su hijo está gravemente enfermo. El motivo de la mudanza es que Raquel ha oído hablar de Ramona, una bruja o curandera, que ha curado a gente enferma de cáncer similar a la enfermedad de su hijo. Tan pronto Raquel llega a su nuevo cuartel a trabajar, recibe una llamada de un crimen en el monte Seixo. Han encontrado el cuerpo de una mujer con características de lo que parece ser un antiguo ritual en la Puerta de Alén, un lugar remoto en el pueblo donde ella se encuentra. Simultáneamente con el asesinato, Raquel le pierde la pista a Ramona, la curandera que ella quiere encontrar para curar a su hijo. La Puerta es un libro que te mantiene la intriga y el suspenso. El autor logra con mucho éxito transmitir la desesperación de nuestra protagonista al luchar contra la enfermedad de su hijo Julián. La historia que constituye La Puerta es el elemento que te hace quedarte intrigado y querer seguir leyendo. El elemento de lo imposible de la situación, junto con el deseo del lector de querer llegar a una solución y resolver el misterio, hace que el libro se lea rápido. Es un libro muy recomendado si disfrutas de los misterios, los secretos y el terror psicológico. Es una historia muy intrigante y con un final extraño y sorprendente. El libro queda muy recomendado. Es todo por hoy. Hasta la próxima edición de Viajero de Libros. Hasta luego.
Thanks, Victor, for another great book review. Remember, if you happen to not know Spanish, check out our English language translation in the show notes. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Check out our events calendar linked in the show notes or online. Wear a mask when you come inside the library. Stay safe, get vaccinated, and we'll talk to you again soon. Beneficent. You can say the word beneficent. You can. I promise you can. And persuade the beneficent. No. No. Beneficent.